Well, there's some more news when it comes to Jennifer Crumbly. 3 days after being denied a new trial, she's now asking the Michigan Court of Appeals for help with bond, saying that she's not a threat and she should be out on bond. Todd Flood is our expert on this case, managing partner of Flood Law. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Anecdotally, we were talking, and, you know, with some of my friends, too, it's like we're kind of tired of all these stories of the Crumblies coming up over and over again. But their new lawyers certainly are appealing, doing the appeal process.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is going to be Groundhog's Day. It's going to continue and continue and continue. So, it was the first time anyone's ever been held accountable in the sense of a mass shooting, parent, that is. It's not the first time a parent has been held accountable for providing a gun to a child or leaving a gun open to a child and, you know, killing somebody, but it's the first time in a mass shooting in our country. So it'll continue, all the way up to the Supreme Court, I'm sure.
She says she's not a threat, but is she viewed as a threat in the eyes of the court?
It's not necessarily a threat. So the appellate bond is a much stricter standard. It's very difficult to get an appeals bond because you have to show basically two factors. It's different than a pretrial. This is post-conviction. So in post-conviction, you got to show by clear and convincing evidence basically that, you know, there was a serious error in fact or in law. And here the defense attorney is saying that Judge Matthews got it wrong, that the law is clear, that they had to turn over this material. I think also I read somewhere in his briefing that there wasn't a duty by Crumbly to the children. That I don't think is necessarily going to be a winner. From my standpoint, you can't give a gun to a kid and have that spiral out of play. But Judge Matthews did admit that the prosecution committed error when they did not or failed to turn over potentially exculpatory material, that being the proffer statements. However, I would imagine she also balanced that with, you know, this was harmless error, or this there was an avalanche of evidence to show that the Crumblies would have been found guilty regardless. So those are going to be the two prongs that go up on the law side. The fact that she is not a flight risk, you know, I've been in some very serious high profile cases from the mayor on down, and there will be a magnifying glass. There will be, you know, spotlights on these people. So I can't imagine there's a flight risk. And you can also make sure that there's home confinement, GPS, check-ins, the all sorts of discretion the court could do if they did, in fact, find an appeal bond. But it's very unlikely that there would be an appellate bond given because the standards for which are very strict.
The core question, Todd, seems to be, did Jennifer Crumbly have the legal duty to protect the victims at Oxford High School? Now, what's the legal precedent on that kind of duty when it comes to a private citizen or parents? And is that a gray area of the law? Is it settled?
So it's pretty much the duty. There isn't a duty to a third party. But here's the thing. The fact of the matter, was there a willful, wanton disregard? Was there this gross negligence in providing a kid a gun that you knew or had reason to know he would be a threat to himself or to others? And in that particular situation, yes, you can't, you're the minor in the household, you can't give that gun. There's all sorts of precedents, and the writings are replete by our Supreme Court and down that there was a duty, in fact, to not give the gun and to protect others, knowing that there could be a potential threat. So, there's a lot of stare decisis, a lot of precedents on that issue. Mm-hmm. So the fact of the matter is, who you're putting who do you have a duty to? You have a duty to the general public when you give a gun to a child, right?
Yeah.
So it's not, you can't identify the children at the school. I think the bigger question was, they gave this proffer agreement. Anything you say to these two counselors and the dean of students, you know, we give you anything you say can't be used against you. Tell us what happened, and we determine the truth. That's going to be the bigger question. Did they? Was that such a faux pas? And I can tell you, every criminal defense attorney is watching this with a very, very close eye. The talk around the water cooler, because now have you just opened up Pandora's box that you can't, you don't have to disclose potentially exculpatory evidence or cross-examination evidence? If I had you on the stand, Lloyd, and I knew that you got this agreement, I'd be asking, you, Lloyd, you determine over here. These people are the ones to determine the truth, what you say up on that stand, not the jury,
right?
You know, but it's over here at the prosecutor's table, you know, and I would, you know, go at you pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. And would I have changed my tactics and my defense? Would I have changed my, you know, defense strategy? That's going to be the big question. And that's what defense attorneys are looking at. What Cheryl Matthews said, is my guess of things is that there was just so much overwhelming evidence that was a harmless error.
All right, Todd Flood, unfortunately, we probably will be calling you on this case as this process continues. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. You guys have a great day.
You too.
The same. You know, it's interesting, too, is we haven't heard a lot out of James Crumbly's case.
I know.
Right? This is all coming out of Jennifer's case.
Yeah, kind of, you know, putting her out there and see what happens. And if it goes well for her, maybe he'll try it.
Well, it was like a week ago, they were like, we want to get the prosecutor's team kicked off misconduct. And then the judge was like, no, that's not happening. And you're fined.
Right.
Take that, too.
Exactly. There's a little life for TikTok as well. So this all kind of started right as Donald Trump took the oath of office. TikTok did go dark for a very short amount of time. I believe it was on the 19th of January. Mm-hmm. They came back, and Donald Trump seems to be open to giving it a little more life.
Well, the whole idea here was that it's dangerous, that the Chinese government could be spying through this app, and that's what Congress decided and passed it. But President Trump came in, put this, like, 90-day reprieve, let's make a deal, let's make it U.S., you know, ownership. Well, that deadline is coming up quickly, and the president intends to again extend the deadline for when TikTok must be separated from its Chinese owner, ByteDance. Caroline Leavitt said on Tuesday that he would sign this executive order this week, giving TikTok 90 more days. So now we're talking till mid-September to find a new owner. But it doesn't seem to be going well.
It doesn't. You're kicking the can down the road.
Right. Yeah. And I thought he had said something that, you know, we're going to get a deal, or there was a deal in the works and some people were, you know, talking, but evidently they must have fell through.
Well, and I was talking to Mike Rogers once, and one of the things he told me was that, yeah, it's not just the fact that the Chinese might be spying. It's the idea that the algorithms here in the United States are different than places like, say,
yes.
China, where in China, the algorithms are STEM and mathematics and educational things, whereas here it's like silly dances with dogs. It's like the dumbing down of the culture.
And probably divisive videos politically.
Correct. All right, we'll take a break. More coming up here on JR Morning.